He vows, "We will not do more with less. Those days are over." And with the shadow of a funding lapse looming, the commandant gave his State of the Coast Guard address this week. He said aging platforms and crumbling infrastructure threaten mission success. He also vowed to take decisive action to alleviate that strain. Admiral Paul Zuntkoft is the 25th commandant of the Coast Guard, and he joins me now. Admiral, great to have you on.
Tom, good morning. It's great to be with you.
All right. So I watched the video of your State of the Coast Guard speech, and while you sounded confident, I sensed a note of disquiet in there over some long-term issues that are affecting the Coast Guard. So review for us what the state is.
Yeah. The state is we've got some of the most phenomenal people serving in the Coast Guard today, and since 1790, that's always been the backbone of our service. But at the same time, our acquisition budget is not keeping up with the aging of our platforms. 50-year-old ships and some of the stations where we conduct our search and rescue operations from are, quite honestly, they're historical landmarks. They're veritable museums. They're over 100 years old, and we're conducting operations from there. So my shore infrastructure alone, I've got about a $1.4 billion backlog, and I operate with an overall budget of $10 billion.
Now, about 20 years ago, there was a major recapitalization effort for the Coast Guard that there was a lot of delays and problems with the vessels that were being built and designed at that time. What happened to that, and what are you doing now? What's the plan if there wasn't sequestration and you get the budget that you wish you had?
Yeah. I think first with our acquisition program, we moved all of that in-house to the point now where I would rack and stack our acquisition program against any. And I would probably say we are the best in the federal government. We won five federal awards last year, and across all of our acquisition programs, we realized about 1% growth across all of that, which is pretty remarkable given some of the vagaries of major acquisitions. The real challenge that sequestration poses, and maybe I'll talk about continuing resolutions first, because that's where we're at today. And with a continuing resolution, I can't start any new acquisition programs. And we've been through over a dozen continuing resolutions over the last 4 years. And so it's this fit and start process, if you will, of trying to conduct acquisitions. It's hard for our folks, equally hard for the industry with whom we're doing work, to be able to say we can provide reliable, predictable funding with a reliable and predictable budget, because we have not had that.
And getting to some of the more global issues, I noticed that you have said that a lot of the Western Hemisphere countries are on the cusp of instability. And so you don't normally think of that as something affecting the Coast Guard, but I guess it really does.
Yeah, as you know, we've been, we've called it a drug war, but, one of our primary mission areas is drug interdiction. We have 41 treaties with other countries, so we effectively become their Coast Guard, exercising law enforcement in their waters to interdict criminal organizations. Well, over the years, this enterprise has flourished to the point where 8 out of 10 countries in the world are in our Western Hemisphere are the most violent in the world. Honduras today is more violent than Iraq was at the height of the insurgency back in 2007. And people scratched their head and said, well, how did we get to this point? Well, the reason is that criminal organizations have come home to roost. It's a $750 billion enterprise, much greater than the GDPs of many of these nations. So corruption, rule of law, and if they don't get their way, they kill people. So that's a real challenge, but it's all has a drug nexus. And one of those drugs is cocaine, which is destined for the United States. And these countries find themselves as somewhat collateral damage to the drug demand here at home in the United States.
And so you have this interdiction, so I guess it's more dangerous now than maybe it was years ago, because you say the people involved in the smuggling are more dangerous and less careful of life than maybe they were at one time.
Yeah, and all this violence, obviously it's taking place in the sovereign soil of these nations, and where these organizations, quite honestly, are most vulnerable is when they're on the water. And that's where we have the upper hand, not just with our authorities, but with the platforms that we operate. And as I mentioned in the State of the Coast Guard address, we've been members of the national intelligence community, and this is an all-of-government approach of tracking the whereabouts of who's moving illicit commerce on the oceans. And on any given day, we have awareness of about 90% of this activity out in the ocean. Unfortunately, I only have enough airplanes and ships to target 20% of that 90%. So it's very frustrating when we knowingly let, you know, that big of a percentage get through the net, so to say.
And with the increase in apparent recruiting by ISIS worldwide, is that affecting the Coast Guard yet? Have you seen anything connected with that that the Coast Guard would touch upon?
It's something, Tom, that we're very focused on. We work closely across all of DHS, especially with Customs and Border Protection, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. We track every ship destined for the United States, over 300 gross tons. We screen every passenger, every crew member, even cargo manifest to ascertain whether there is that terror nexus. And obviously, those vessels would be treated differently. Have we seen any activity of late? No. But are we keeping a watch on it? You bet.
And I think you also mentioned that there's something that happens in the last few years, and that is the creation of a new ocean because of melting and more water in the way up north, in the North Pole region. And how did that affect the Coast Guard?
Well, the Coast Guard's been up in the Arctic regions and off Alaska since 1867 with what was then called Seward's Folly. Not such a folly because today about 13% of the world's unexploited oil and 30% of natural gas and about $1 trillion worth of minerals are up in the Arctic domain right now. So we're seeing a more than doubling increase in human activity, and with that comes our responsibility to be in those waters as well. Our real limitation is icebreakers.
That was my next question. Yeah, how are you doing with icebreakers?
Not well. We've got two. One is the Polar Star. I wouldn't say it's a Coast Guard. It's the nation's only heavy icebreaker because it really services a number of equities in our federal government, not just for the Coast Guard. It's a 40-year-old ship, and they're on their way back now from Antarctica. On their way back, there was a disabled vessel beset over 150 miles into ice. Some of it upwards of 20 feet thick, and quite honestly, this would have been another revisit of Shackleton's expedition if the Polar Star wasn't there to break them out. On the way back, Polar Star experienced a switchboard fire, which if that had happened earlier, it probably would have compromised their ability to conduct the mission that they just completed. So again, that's just an issue of aging platforms as we look at recapitalizing that capability. And then we have one medium icebreaker, fairly new, Coast Guard Cutter Healy, but it's a medium icebreaker. It can't break the 20-foot thick ice that the Polar Star can.
We're speaking with Admiral Paul Zunkoft. He's the 25th Commandant of the Coast Guard. And so let's talk about the 2016 proposed budget. What are the top priorities in there, and if it goes through as proposed, what would it mean for the Coast Guard?
Yeah, the top one, and I'm very pleased, is that it fully funds our fast response cutters. These are 154 feet long. We're on a fixed contract price. We've taken delivery of 12. We'll soon take delivery of our 13th here next month. We're going to build out 58 of these altogether. And these have been delivered on time, on contract, with just phenomenal quality control in that as well. Very, very pleased with this platform. But the 16 budget allows me to build six of those. We acquired 14 C-27J aircraft from the Air Force, and it allows me to start missionizing those aircraft. Where we fall short is the offshore patrol cutter. We have partial funding, but this is going to be the most significant acquisition in Coast Guard history, and it's imperative that we get full funding to move that project forward.
And you're looking at some shipbuilders that you don't normally associate with military-grade shipbuilding, people that build barges and ferries, too.
Yeah, it's very diversified, and quite honestly, we're seeing a significant increase in shipbuilding throughout the United States, especially due to what I call the energy renaissance. There are over 15 U.S. flagged ships under construction in the United States today. So in the past, many of our shipyards were dependent upon military contracts, but there's been a significant increase in commercial work as well in our shipbuilding shipyards across the U.S.
And so if you had all of the ships that you feel the Coast Guard requires, do you have enough billets? Do you have enough bodies to staff all of the programs that you would hope to?
Yeah. Over the last several years, Tom, we've had to make some difficult choices, trade-offs between acquisitions and enforced structure. And as a result of that, we drew down over 1,500 people. And for the Army, that's a small number. For the Coast Guard, that's a big number when we only have 40,000 active duty members to begin with. So no work went away with that. So we're right now at the floor, the minimum force strength, and I can't drop any lower than where we're at right now. So as we make difficult decisions going forward, cutting force structure is not an option for the Coast Guard.
And is the Coast Guard in line with the Navy and the other armed services in terms of its operating tempo, which is higher probably than people tend to realize?
Very much so. In fact, the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Greener, and I, we interact weekly. We will soon sign out a cooperative strategy for the 21st century. And when I look at all the demands that the Navy has on its plate, I look at those places where the Navy can't be. And so we become the filler, if you will, to close those areas. And right now, the big area, the gap that I need to close is right here in the Western Hemisphere, off Central and South America.
And also, you have a new agreement with NOAA, which is something that's been longstanding with the Commerce Department. Anything new in the new agreement?
No, actually, it's a great working relationship up at our Coast Guard Academy. Our NOAA officers train. They actually get licensed at our Coast Guard Academy. Their ships are serviced at our Coast Guard Yard here in Baltimore. And we share a common mission set in fisheries enforcement. We do much of the at sea, but we share the information of which fishery stocks are at risk and which vessels are high priority to be inspected. So very symbiotic relationship that we have with NOAA.
All right. Admiral Paul Zundkoft is the 25th Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. You've been there now, what, in place about a year?
About 9 months.
Okay, so that was your first State of the Coast Guard address?
That was, yes, Tom.
All right, well, I thank you for being with us this morning.
Okay, Tom, thank you very much.